Thomas charging through the midfield. Thomas, it's up for grabs now. Thomas.
A Bolt. And it's Tony Adams put through by Steve Bolt. Would you believe it?
Still Nasri.
Looks for a shabby.
Welcome to Happy Hour on the Fuselade. I'm Aidan Gibson.
I'm Ted Harwood.
And today, it is indeed a happy hour because Arsenal came back from 2 goals down to beat Tottenham Hotspur 5-2 in the North London Derby. Ted, what were your general thoughts about today's comeback?
My general thoughts are that I really don't understand Arsenal. They are a team that have such extremes like of play that they're either look just terrible like they did against Milan, or they look unbeatable like they did today for most of the last 60 minutes of the match, and like they did against Blackburn when they won 7-1. The only thing that I can think of generally why that might be is that teams like Milan or Sunderland, who are good at just sitting really deep and not giving any space, Arsenal just don't have any solutions for that. But Spurs are never going to just sit deep. They're never going to put 10 men behind the ball. I mean, that's just not what Spurs do. And if Spurs aren't on top of their game, especially away at the Emirates, and they leave a lot of space, then Arsenal are able to do what they did today. Although it certainly wasn't always guaranteed.
No, and I think you could probably describe the first 5 minutes, perhaps even the first 10-15 minutes, especially the back, as somewhat shambolic. I thought Arsenal started the game, really, really badly. Not only did they concede a goal that was awful in terms of the defending, but also they couldn't pass the ball. They started the first 15 minutes or so, they had a 75% pass completion rate, which is certainly below what Arsenal are usually capable of. And, the first 5 minutes, Spurs settled well, they got the goal. And then I think, I think this is perhaps Harry Redknapp's failing. He saw what Sunderland did defensively. He saw what Milan did. And I think he tried to have his team sit back, and ultimately he paid for it. But on that first goal, so we see, first of all, Spurs played two strikers, which I think Lara Koscielny and Thomas Vermaelen have the potential to be a wonderful defensive partnership. Both are very good defenders, but with each of them having a striker to cover, I think there's a problem in that you expect them not to do their natural thing, which is to come out, win the ball quickly, which Vermaelen likes to do more than Koscielny. So the first goal, Koscielny comes up to Adebayor, and then Kyle Walker makes a great run through the middle.
Yeah.
And then Tom and Alex Song, having not covered that run, then leaves Walker alone. Vermaelen goes to cover it, and then Louis Saha is left in a bunch of space. Vermaelen realizes about halfway as he's going to Walker that Saha's in a lot of space, and that's where the pass is on from Adebayor. Tries to go back, does get a block in, but eventually makes the shot go over Wojciech Szczęsny. I'm not sure whether it's necessarily Vermaelen at fault or Alex Song, the defense as a whole. What do you think?
I think it's hard to pin the entire thing on Vermaelen, like a lot of people wanted to do immediately after it happened at halftime. There was a lot of, on Twitter, it was all Thomas Vermaelen is as good a defender as everybody thinks he is. And we know that, positioning is not Vermaelen's strength. That's probably the weakest part of his game overall, is his positioning. And a lot of that has to do with his tendency to be really aggressive. But in this particular instance, I think it was just a combination of a lot of things that Arsenal kind of did wrong. Alex Song didn't do much at all. Vermaelen got dragged away pretty easily by Kyle Walker, and Gibbs wasn't following Saha at all. So I think it was just, you know, I think on every goal there's probably more than one mistake that gets made. And I think this was a pretty classic example of that. I think there was a lot of mistakes that got made.
Sure. And
even so, I mean, Vermaelen almost recovered, and the deflection unfortunately went in, but it could have very well have gone wide, and then people would be saying, you know, what a wonderful recovery that was by Vermaelen after being pulled out of position.
Sure, and I think there's an aspect of every goal, there's an error somewhere. You know, that's why goals are scored, unless it's an absolute wonder strike.
Yeah.
But it tends to be with Arsenal that the goals that they concede are really simple. And, you know, this goal was fairly simple. One thing that a lot of people didn't mention is that as Adebayor receives the ball initially, Koscielny falls over, gives Adebayor that just extra yard of space to play the pass. If he hadn't fallen over, he might have come in, won the ball, or maybe conceded a free kick, but Arsenal might not have gone behind right away. And then, you know, the second goal, they had chances on the break after that, you know, with similar styles of passages of play. And the second goal was kind of a long ball for Gareth Bale, and Kieran Gibbs' positioning wasn't good. And then he never has the pace to recover and get past Bale. And then I'm not exactly sure who's a judge to have fouled Bale. I'm not sure whether it's Gibbs or Chesney, because if it's Chesney who does concede the penalty, then it's a dive, because Wojciech Chesney does not touch Gareth Bale. If it's Gibbs, I might see a penalty, because I think there was contact.
Yeah, I didn't really think it was a penalty, to be honest, but Kevin McCauley from Cartilage Free Captain pointed out that if it's a penalty, it's also a red card. And if it's not a red card, then it's not a penalty. And Mike Dean seemed to do this thing where, you know, he blew and then went over and talked to his linesman, tried to figure out what happened. They talked for about 10 seconds, and then he just gave the penalty and didn't really say what happened. You know, there was no card or anything. So it was just kind of like, well, what just happened?
Right. And I mean, I think one aspect might have been that Bale was actually going away from goal.
Yeah.
That it might not have been an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, but it's still a penalty. But yeah, I thought there was at least going to be a yellow. Maybe he couldn't figure out who's the one who fouled him. Maybe he thought they both fouled him or something. It was a really bizarre Mike Dean call, but you know, it's Mike Dean, so.
Yeah, and I do think that up until that moment, I thought Arsenal had actually come into the match pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't passing particularly well, but they were keeping pressure, sustained pressure on Spurs at 1-0 down.
Right.
Until that goal happened, and then it was all of a sudden it was 2-0, and that one felt a little bit against the run of play, honestly.
No. I certainly agree. I think it was against the run of play. Arsenal had, you know, they'd had a couple of penalty shot of their own, which I thought was a penalty. I thought Kieran Gibbs was taken down by Kyle Walker. Robin van Persie had a shot that went inches wide that I thought was going in. And they had the better of the play. This goal was against the run of play. And I think that's why it was, again, you know, very frustrating, because it was a very simple goal to not concede. You know, it was something that was easily preventable, but I mean, I don't know, Kieran Gibbs, he improved as the game went on, and his forward play was very good, but it's hard not, you know, you think, he only played 60 minutes against Milan, he came off at some point today, I can't remember how long, maybe 75 minutes in?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, about that.
He was allegedly had a knock. You know, you don't know how much training Kieran Gibbs has had over the past couple of weeks. He didn't play away at Sunderland, so you know, I don't want to be very critical of Gibbs, and perhaps I'm going off on a tangent here. I don't want to be critical of Gibbs, but it's hard to get an idea of how good he is when he hardly ever has a run of games.
Yeah, I mean, this is the third game he's played in, or second game?
Second game
he's played in, what, you know, 6 months. it's impossible to say. I mean, it seems like he's slower too now, which I don't know if that's just because of the injury that he's sort of playing with right now. But
I mean, I thought he was I mean, it's not like he's Per Mertesacker slow, but, you know, Kieran Gibbs used to be very quick. He was a winger before he was converted to a left-back. He used to be very, very quick, and I think he still has good pace, but you could see against Bale and Kyle Walker, too, at times, that he was always struggling when they put the afterburners on.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, I mean, those are probably Tottenham's two fastest players besides right. Aaron Lennon, so they might be faster than Aaron Lennon, both of those guys, so... So, I mean, anybody would struggle.
Sure. And perhaps for being harsh. One thing that I'm going to touch on tomorrow's post, but I think we should also talk about it here, was, you know, we criticised Gibbs and perhaps Sanya too for leaving a lot of space behind, but when they went forward, they were very good going forward, and Bakary Sanya got Arsenal's first goal.
Yeah, he did, and it was weird to see him pop up in the middle like that.
Yeah.
That was my first thought. I was like, wait, what's he doing there?
What? I literally turned to my dad and said, what the hell is Bakary Sanya doing in Tottenham's penalty box?
Yeah.
And then my second thought was, Bakary Sanya might be our second best centre forward.
It was a good header.
It was a very good header.
Yeah, it was surprising. I mean, you know, part of me almost wonders, like, did he think that Van Persie scored? Because Van Persie hit the outside of the post with his shot about 5 seconds before that.
So he's like, he's running in to say, yes, Robin, get it! Or yeah. Maybe get the ball. The
ball comes out to Mikel Arteta, who, like, crosses it in, and Sanya just heads it in.
Mm-hmm.
It was very weird.
The thing, he does make a very good run and gets across Gareth Bale and then beats Gareth Bale. You know, the 5'9" Bakary Sanya beats the 6'1" Gareth Bale in the air to head home. But yeah, you did wonder what he was doing there. And both of our fullbacks were involved in that goal. Gibbs collected Van Persie's rebounded shot and passed it to Arteta. Sanya came in and headed it. But, you know, Sanya just being in the box was weird. If it was Kieran Gibbs, or Andre Santos, I probably wouldn't have been as surprised because they're both very attacking fullbacks. But that was Bakary Sanya's third goal ever in the league.
I can't remember the last time Bakary Sanya left the touchline in the opposition half. Anyway,
I think he might have when he scored against Everton last year.
Yeah, that's like the last time.
Yeah. But he was involved in most of what Arsenal did. He assisted for Thomas Rosicki, who scores when he wants.
Yep.
And I think that was something that Spurs had problems with. And I think that, you know, you talked about Sunderland and Milan playing deeper and, you know, Arsenal having problems with that. I think Harry Redknapp tried to get his team to do that, but... And that has worked against Arsenal for Tottenham before. You know, they were pretty good at snuffing us out at White Hart Lane in October. I remember a couple of seasons ago at White Hart Lane, they did that as well. They were very deep and narrow. But it almost seemed like, you know, they never seemed that organized today. They always looked poor defensively. Gareth Bale didn't do a good job. Nico Kranjčar didn't do a good job. And maybe Harry Redknapp's feigned tactics of just run about a bit failed in that aspect because they aren't used to playing defensively, Tottenham, this season.
It's strange because I think maybe one of the sort of hidden things that people haven't really talked about too much in this game is the fact that Benoit Assou-Ekotto was virtually anonymous this entire game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that... I mean, Walcott... You could say a lot of that was Walcott just keeping him pinned back because Assou-Ekotto's, you know, he tends to get forward a lot, as far as I can tell. But today, it was like he wasn't even there, you know, at either end of the pitch, almost. Which was strange, because he's been one of the best left-backs, probably maybe the best left-back in the Premier League this year.
Sure, yeah. And, no, it was... We seemed to neutralize him as an attacking threat. I can't remember him getting forward. Maybe he got forward once or twice. And yeah, you're right, he didn't do, I mean, he didn't deal with Sanya, he didn't deal particularly well with Walcott in the second half. And Walcott kept coming in field in the first half, trying to find space. So, I mean, that is an interesting aspect. And maybe we tried to play away from Asuakato. Maybe we, you know, realized that we weren't going to get any joy out of him. Certainly when Arsenal scored their third goal and Thomas Rosicky got a goal, they created a 2v1 situation on the right with Rosicky and Sanya. And I think that was one way of making sure that he was a non-factor.
Well, yeah, I think that goal, I'll come back to that in a second. I think one thing was that in the second half in particular, Walcott stayed inside a lot more. He he didn't play as wide, and that seemed to work pretty well. And on that goal, on Rosicky's goal, watching the replay of that, Arsenal outnumbered Spurs.
Yeah.
In the box on that goal. There were five Arsenal players went in straight at the goal. And there were only, and just Tottenham's back four was back there, and Brad Friedel. But Tottenham's two central midfielders were just nowhere near that goal. Parker and Sandro wasn't on at that point. Yeah, he was. Sandro was on at that point. They were just nowhere near it. And Arsenal just like flooded the penalty area, and Rosicky laid it off to Sanya and just ran straight ahead, and it was just a complete overload.
Yeah, and you know that was a kind of classic Arsenal goal. It all started with Kieran Gibbs and Alex Song having a very quick interchange of passes. Song takes it quickly to Van Persie, then Van Persie switches it out wide to Rosicky.
Yeah,
and you know it was a very quick counter attack. And, you know, our fourth goal is a counter-attack, and then our fifth goal is just a ball over the top when Tottenham were in disarray.
Yeah.
And, you know, that Theo Walcott, he's been criticised a lot, as Robin Van Persie would say. I was very vocal in my criticism of him during the match. I thought he should have been taken off at half-time. I'm sure I'm not the only one who thought he should have been taken off at half-time. I wouldn't be surprised if almost everyone except for Theo Walcott, maybe Robin Van Persie and Arsene Wenger thought he should be taken off at half-time. Because Walcott really did almost nothing in the first half, except he had one nice back heel for Van Persie when his shot hit the post.
Yeah.
And he wasn't getting anything out wide. He seemed to come through the middle as a second striker, which didn't work against Sunderland, didn't really work here. But in the second half, after Arsenal got their third goal and dropped deep a little bit, Spurs had to come out, Walcott started getting space, and with space, Walcott's very dangerous.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, it's funny because at this point, I think we all sort of know what Walcott can do and what he struggles with, and this is exactly the type of match where he should be doing well, because Spurs don't play a very deep defensive line, so whether he's out on the wing or cutting inside more, this is the type of match where he should have a lot of opportunities. We know he doesn't have the best first touch. Even Arsene Wenger knows he doesn't have the best first touch. He actually said so after the match today, which was weird, I thought, you know. Arsene Wenger said that Theo's a very direct player. He can sometimes miss a first touch, but considering the balance of the team, I thought it was important to keep him in the side. And he's probably right about that, because Walcott really is probably still Arsenal's best player at getting behind a high line. Mm-hmm. So he's probably right. I mean, of course he's right. He's Arsene Wenger. But
I would agree with that. And I also think that Spurs coming out in the second half, after they went 3-2 down, played a big role in Walcott being effective, because all of a sudden he was finding pace, and, you know, not only did he have two goals, he also had a Thomas Rosicky through ball, kind of diving through ball, that which found Walcott. He made that kind of outside-to-in run. He was, he burnt the Tottenham defence, and then he shot just wide. It was a very good shot from a tight, from a wide angle. He didn't really have any options in the box, and, you know, with a bit more luck, it could have gone in.
Yeah.
Pressing. That's something that we did very well today, I thought. And, you know, you noticed that in the match thread, I believe, and, you know, look, watching the highlights afterwards, I noticed it as well. We did a before Walcott's fifth goal, we did a really job. Van Persie, Arteta, Ben Ayoun did a really good job of closing down Friedel, Cabal, King, Asuakoto, and forcing them to give the ball away.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually thought for most of the second half and the latter stages of the first half, Arsenal were pressing really well.
Yeah, and yeah,
I think Thomas Rosicky had his best game today that he's probably had in 3 years, maybe, for Arsenal. I really do.
I thought
he and Van Persie were just unbelievable today.
Mm-hmm. I thought he played really well with Ben Ayoun. You know, Ben Ayoun, Rosicky, little nice 1-2s, interchanging of positions, movement. It was all, you know, it was very nice to watch. And sometimes with Arsenal this season, with Jovinho and Walcott as your wide players, there's a bit more, you know, there's a bit frustrating if they give the ball away, if they, you know, they can be great when they're on their game, when they're dribbling past people, but it's not quite the same as, you know, seeing Rosicky and Ben Ayoun pass the ball well, make little jinking movements, reverse passes, for example. And one thing that I think Thomas Rosicky does very well, I think he does very well in dribbling away from players, which Aaron Ramsey doesn't do as well. I think he's also much more mobile than Aaron Ramsey in terms of getting out. You know, I think Arsenal Colin called him as a decoy when he played against Blackburn, getting out wide, you know, supporting Ben Ayoun, supporting Walcott. I think he's much more mobile in that regard.
Yeah, I think so too. It's strange because he's 31 years old, 32 years old maybe now. But Rosicky has a little bit of that sort of unknowable quality that Cesc Fabregas had, where whenever he picks up the ball, he seems to have a little bit of space.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really good at sort of like sensing where pressure is coming from like all directions,
mm-hmm.
and sort of positioning himself with the ball so he can do something before the pressure takes the ball away. And he's also really good at making passes from sort of unnatural body positions. I don't really know how to describe that, but there was a moment today that sort of sums up what he does, which he was being closed down almost immediately from behind. And as he felt the actual physical presence of the defender behind him actually pushing him, he fell over but passed at the same time while he was falling over. And it was like a weird like sliding pass.
Yeah, he does that quite a lot. And one thing that I'm actually very impressed by him, you know, something that you wouldn't expect is his ability to make that kind of, it's the same kind of movement, which is weird, but, you know, when he makes tackles, he seems to be a very good tackler and reaching out and getting the ball.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if Ramsey is as good at that. And, you know, they're different players. And certainly Rosicky's lack of a goal until today had been a problem. Aaron Ramsey doesn't have that many goals, but he seems to be more of a threat. But I think Rosicky does a much better job in knitting play together, you know, keeping it moving in upping the tempo.
Yeah, almost everything is one touch or two touch with Rosicky.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Ramsey seems to take a touch, maybe look, check back, move forward, take another touch, then make a pass. And, you know, I think one thing that we did really well today was, and Arsene Wenger alluded to it in his post-match press conference, you know, keeping the pace up, keeping the tempo. After we equalized at 2-2, we started the second half. You know, we had a chance right away. Mikel Arteta slipping in Yossi Ben Ayoun. We really kept the pace up. We really kept the tempo up. And I think that meant that we could get beyond Spurs, Spurs' midfield, and Harry Redknapp had tried to match things up with Sandro coming in and making a three, but we just kept getting behind. And then Spurs kind of had to rejig again because they went behind. Then they were in disarray.
Yeah.
So, I think in terms of performance, this might have been the best performance of, considering the opposition, considering you were two goals down, this might be the best performance of, well, this is certainly the best performance of 2012 this might be the best performance since Arsenal beat Borussia Dortmund in November.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, I agree, yeah.
Any more thoughts about the Spurs game?
No, other than it was awesome and that it's a bummer for Spurs that Scott Parker has to miss the game against Manchester United next weekend.
It is a bummer, but as a fan of a team that doesn't have much interest in the title race except wanting to see Schadenfreude at the likes of Samir Nasri, I'm hoping that United beat Tottenham next week, because Tottenham could go into a slide, and, you know, I know that focusing on fourth place is the initiative this season, but, you know, we're all of a sudden only 7 points back of Tottenham with 12 to play. If we beat Liverpool, which will be no easy task, and that we'll get to later in the podcast, but if we beat them and Tottenham lose, all of a sudden 4 points back, 11 games to play, if I was a Tottenham fan, I would be fair. I'd be pretty concerned.
Yeah.
One player who did miss out on the North London Derby and will miss out on the rest of the season was Andrei Arshavin, who, of course, went on loan to Zenit St. Petersburg. And just quickly, you know, we both were somewhat annoyed about Arshavin leaving. I think we were both critical, but you always seem to appreciate Arshavin a bit more. So, Ted, I don't know if you wanted to say you had any emotional goodbye or something.
I don't have an emotional goodbye.
I'll turn the sad music off then.
I just really, it does make me a little bit sad, just because I love watching Arshavin do things, whether it's on the football pitch or not. Because he's just such a goofball, you know.
Yeah.
He's such a weird person. He's like a deeply weird person. You can sense this in his interviews.
Mm-hmm.
You can sense this in the photographs that he takes of himself. He's a really nice person, but he's a weird person. He's like, everybody has one friend who's like totally sweet and totally nice, but also just deeply, deeply like disturbed in a harmless way. And even if his skills on the football pitch had been in decline, and not even I dispute that, although I dispute the degree to which they declined, I guess, compared with some others, but it's just sad to see him leave because, you know, he's just a funny guy to have around, you know. I don't know who will take up the mantle of Arsenal funny guy now that Edouard is gone and Arshavin is gone.
Frimpong.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's Frimpong or Koscielny. Maybe Carl Jenkinson is secretly hilarious.
Well, you know, Koscielny always makes funny faces, so there's that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you talk about Arshavin. The thing about him is that he looked 15, and I think he also acted like he was 15. And I'll certainly miss him. And I think, you know, it's fitting that his last action was to produce a great cross when no one else could for Thierry Henry. So, you know, if you think Arshavin is useless, just go back and watch Thierry Henry's last goal for Arsenal and appreciate Andre Arshavin, because I don't think he's going to play for Arsenal again. I think he'll be sold in the summer.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, that's sad. And what else is sad is that Arshavin had such a good goal-scoring record against the team that we were next about, the team we are going to play next week. Liverpool, who beat Cardiff, championship side Cardiff, on penalties to win the Carling Cup. Charlie Adams' penalty, I believe, is still in orbit. I'm not sure when that one's coming down.
I don't even think it's in orbit. I think it achieved escape velocity. I think it's actually leaving the solar system.
Oh, he certainly, you know, there are some hilariously bad penalties in that shootout, but that was definitely, you know, that was about, from the minute he hit it, you know, that one was well over the bar.
It wasn't even like Rooney's that missed by like 2 feet. It missed by like 8 feet.
you know, that thing was it was worse than Chris Waddle's penalty in 1990, or Pallanti, as it's Chris Waddle. We play Liverpool next week. How do you see that one? You know, not a prediction, but how do you see it playing out in terms of passage of play, et cetera, et cetera?
I don't think that Liverpool are going to play as badly as they did today. It's Anfield, for one thing, and I would back Liverpool against almost anybody on earth at Anfield right now. They've been really, really good at home this year. The other thing was that I can't see... Well, Andy Carroll, I'm not terribly afraid of, other than the fact that he's enormous and our center halves have trouble with that. But I can't see Luis Suarez playing as badly today against us as he did today. I can't see it. So I think he'll present some problems. Liverpool did have a number of shots today, but they were mostly from distance. And not all of them missed by much. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Cardiff just tried so hard today. I mean, they were just the work rate and the application. I mean, half of them were, like, dead on their feet in extra time, and they were still running after everything and getting in front of everything. And I'm just not sure. I don't see it. I think that was maybe, you know, that wasn't very representative of how Liverpool actually are. And they still won. But I don't know. I mean, Anfield, yeah, it's a frightening prospect in a way. It's really hard to say based on the first fixture this year how things are going to go, because at that time we didn't really have nearly the same team we have now,
right,
in terms of personnel either. So,
and their team has certainly changed since then. Lucas Leiva is out for the season, so they don't actually have a holding midfielder, which, if Thomas Rosicky is fit, and I actually think he's going to be, I think Arsene Wenger might be saying, you know, that he might be exaggerating the knocks that Rosicky and Vermaelen picked up. Because if Rosicky plays not 45 or maybe or 90 minutes for the Czech Republic this week, he probably won't be fit enough to play on Saturday, because, again, he's 31, he's had a lot of injuries. I think he'd like Vermaelen to not play international football so he could spend more time with Sanya, Koscielny and Gibbs, who haven't been called up for any international games. But, you know, I think Liverpool have had a lot of draws at home. They drew with City, they drew with United, they drew with Tottenham. They don't concede a lot of goals. I think this is going to be a draw. I think Arsenal are going to score, but I also think that Liverpool will probably score from a set piece, because, you know, we're not that great at defending them.
No, it's true. And Andy Carroll has given us trouble with on set pieces before, with another player who delivers set pieces in sort of the same way that Joey Barton did at Newcastle. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fact that Lucas Leiva isn't around is a big boost for Arsenal, or should be a big boost for Arsenal, because you can't really see Jordan Henderson and Charlie Adam, or Steven Gerrard and Charlie Adam tracking Arsenal's attacking midfielders. So,
no.
Theoretically, there could be a lot of space in between the lines for Arsenal to run around in, presuming they don't have problems of their own defending. So, and also Liverpool don't have the quickest center backs either, especially if Jamie Carragher is playing. So,
which he could be, because Agger came off injured. But I think Liverpool are going to set up defensively in this game, and because that's generally how they set up when facing United this year, when facing City this year, and facing Tottenham this year. You know, they play deeper, and I think, you know, because they have a lack of pace, I think they're going to be somewhat forced to play deep, unless they want to get ripped by Theo Walcott, because, you know, that's the thing that he's good at, as we touched on earlier. But I think they're going.
You think Dirk Kuyt will play then, probably?
I think they'll probably play Dirk Kuyt, because he'll track Arsenal's fullbacks, Kieran Gibbs, presumably.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether they'll play Andy Carroll, whether he'll go for three in midfield as they did when they played Arsenal in August, or whether they'll go for long balls to Carroll, winning knockdowns for maybe Craig Bellamy. Probably not Craig Bellamy, because I think he's playing for Wales in the Gary Speed Memorial. And they try to limit his games. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Couch start. I wouldn't be surprised either way to see Carroll start or him not start. And I also wouldn't be surprised to see Liverpool set up on the counter-attack.
Yeah, I mean, I think that seems likely. It seems strange to set up that way at Anfield for them, but yeah, I mean, I could see it.
And, I mean, the thing is, a draw at Anfield isn't a bad result. They have a game in hand, which is at Everton, which will be a tough game for them. You know, a draw, they're 7 points behind us. You know, I you know, when you talk about them as contenders for fourth, I think if we get a draw, it's a very good result for us, considering that Chelsea still have to go there as well. So, all things considered, I take a draw.
Yeah, I would too. I would for sure take a draw. Yeah.
So, and it's also on the... We also get to have the joys of listening to Steve McManaman next week. Yay.
Yeah, I actually like Ian Dark, so... And the other thing about ESPN that I like is that it's in HD, so I can actually see things rather clearly.
Mm.
For some reason in Chicago, Fox Soccer Channel doesn't come in HD, despite the fact there are probably about a million people watching soccer on any weekend in Chicago, so...
Yeah. Do you have any specific prediction for Saturday? Park playing, perhaps, or Abu Dhabi landing from a spaceship?
Nothing that outlandish has come to me, and I don't think anything that outlandish ever happens at Anfield either. So,
well, now that Arshavin's gone,
exactly. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think like a 1-1 draw seems honestly the most likely.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Any other thoughts before we wrap it up?
Nope, just that I'm glad that we won the North London Derby today. It's brought a positive light to my entire upcoming week, so...
Definitely, this is definitely a game where I'm going to be smiling the whole week, thinking about it, thinking about how we were 2-0 down and won 5-2.
Yep. And but yeah, other than that, nothing...
All right. And on that positive note, because it's been a very positive weekend, you've been listening to Fusillade, the Short Fuses podcast. I'm Aidan Gibson.
I'm Ted Harwood.
And we will be back next week. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.